Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9. Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayer, 6:35, 7. Tasmai bhavam hayashishir shiras tanuvam hibibrat. Veda dhruvati balo madukaita bhakyao. Hadvana yat chuti ganam sharajas tamas cha. Sadvam tava priyatamam tanu amayanti. Tasmai unto Lord Brahma. Bhavan, your lordship, Hayashira, having the head and neck of a horse, Tanuvam, the incarnation, he indeed, Vibrat, accepting, Veda Druhau, two demons were against the Vedic principles. Ati Balao, extremely powerful. Maru Kaitava, Akyao, known as Maru and Kaitava. Hatva, killing. Anayat, delivered. Shuti Ganan, all the different Vedas, Sama, Yajur, Rig, and Atharva. Cha and Rajatama Cha. By representing the modes of passion, ignorance. Satvam, pure transcendental goodness. Tava, your. Priyatamam, most dear. Tanam, form, as Hari Griva. Amananti, they honor. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear Lord, when you appeared as Hari Griva with the head of a horse, you killed two demons known as Madhu and Kaitava, who are full of the modes of passion and ignorance. Then you deliver the Vedic knowledge to Lord Brahma. For this reason, all the great saints accept your forms as transcendental, untinged by material qualities. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in His transcendental form is always ready to give protection to His devotees. As mentioned herein, the Lord in the form of Hari Griva killed two demons named Madhu and Kaitava when they attacked Lord Brahma. Modern demons think that there is no life in the beginning of creation, but from Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that the first living creature created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead was Lord Brahma, who is full of Vedic understanding. Unfortunately, those entrusted with distributing Vedic knowledge, such as the devotees engaged in spreading Krishna consciousness, may sometimes be attacked by demons, but they must rest assured that demoniac attacks will not be able to harm them. The Lord is always prepared to give them protection. The Vedas provide the knowledge by which we can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedaischa savara aham eva vedya. The devotees of the Lord are always ready to spread knowledge by which one may understand the Lord through Krishna consciousness. But the demons, being unable to understand the Supreme Lord, are full of ignorance and passion. Thus the Lord, whose form is transcendental, is always ready to kill the demons. By cultivating the mode of goodness, one can understand the position of the transcendental Lord and how the Lord is always prepared to remove all obstacles on the path of understanding Him. In summary, whenever the Lord incarnates, He appears in His original transcendental form As the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 4:7, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam shrijamyaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. It is simply foolish to think of the Lord as being originally impersonal, but accepting material body when he appears as a personal incarnation. Whenever the Lord appears, he appears in his original transcendental form, which is spiritual and blissful. But unintelligent men, such as the Mayavadis, cannot understand the transcendental form of the Lord. Therefore the Lord chastises them by saying, Abhijananti mamudha manushim dhanam ashrityam. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. Whenever the Lord appears, either as a fish, a tortoise, a hog, or any other form, one should understand that he maintains his transcendental position and that his only business is stated here is hatva, to kill the demons. The Lord appears in order to protect devotees and kill demons, pritranaya sarunam vinashaya tridiskritam. Since the demons are always ready to oppose Vedic civilization, they are sure to be killed by the transcendental form of the Lord. My dear Lord, when you appeared as Hari Griva with the head of a horse, you killed two demons known as Madhu and Kaitava, who were full of the modes of passion and ignorance. When you delivered the Vedic knowledge to Lord Brahma, then you delivered the Vedic knowledge to Lord Brahma. For this reason, all the great saints accept your forms as transcendental, untinged by material qualities. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna begins the ninth chapter by saying, Idam te na idam tu te guyatamam pravaksham anusuyave jnanam vijnanam sahitam yajgyatva moksha se shubhat. Because you are never envious of me, Arjuna, I'll explain to you the most confidential knowledge, by both theoretical and realized knowledge, by knowing which you'll become free from all the miseries of material existence. So the material world is based on envy. Everyone is envious of Krishna. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita declares that he's the source of everything. Everything is controlled by him. Everything is owned by him. Everything is meant for his happiness and satisfaction. So naturally people are envious. If they're envious, even an ant is in their house. They become envious of the ant and want to crush it. How dare you enter into my house and breathe my space? You're taking up too much room in my house. So even an insignificant ant, people are envious of, what to speak of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Krishna begins with saying, because you're not envious of me. And what are the, how is enviousness manifested in the modes of ignorance and passion? Icchā dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani samoham sargayanti parantapa. That all living entities are born into delusion, overcome by the desires by desire and hate. So, what do we hate? What do we desire? We want to become God. Maybe, obviously, we're going to have a hard time becoming the all-pervading God. But we want to become little gods. But we have to wake up to the fact that we're actually not God. That there's no use of hankering to become the controller of the universe, because we're never going to become the controller of the universe. And there's no sense lamenting that we can't do it, because it's not what we're supposed to be doing. We're not supposed to control everything, put everything in its right place. Oh, I see in Brahmaloka there's a shelf out of place. Let me go there and fix it. Make the universe perfect. No, we're always going to be tiny. So since we're going to be tiny eternally, we might as well get used to it, because eternity is a long time. And if we want to be something we're not eternally, then we're going to have to suffer, that's all. So Krishna says, if you become non-envious to me, and obviously by his devotees also, then your miseries will go away, because then you'll no longer misidentify yourself with the gross and subtle body, which is the source of all misery. And then Krishna says, it's not all bad. Raja vidya, raja guyam, pavitram idam uttamam, pravakshavagramam dharmyam, susukam kartum avyam. That this knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets, is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, is the perfection of religion, it is everlasting and joyfully performed. In other words, the knowledge given in this ninth chapter about Krishna will actually make one happy. If one actually accepts it, if one becomes non-envious, then one can hear the knowledge, and if one can hear the knowledge, then one will become happy. Susukam kartum avyam. So, Vedic culture is meant to get free from envy, namely, the modes of ignorance and passion. How do we know if we're envious? Because we're hankering. And how do we know when we're envious? Because we're lamenting. Now we may say, well, I'm just innocent. You know, obviously, I had a pet squirrel and it died. Why should I lament? Because you thought it was your pet squirrel. You thought it died because you're in ignorance. Therefore, you're lamenting. You don't understand things properly. It wasn't your pet squirrel, and it didn't die. The soul took another body because that was its karma. And your lamentation is just a waste of time. You should wake up and realize not only your pet squirrel died, but you're going to die too. You're going to have to leave your body. And your pet squirrel is not going to lament about it. Therefore, if one can get free from the ignorance and passion, which is what anartha nivritti. Now we may think, oh, Krishna consciousness is is complicated philosophy, so many verses, so many books, but ultimately it's just to become free from hankering and lamentation. If we stop hankering and lamenting, then we'll be liberated. But we won't be able to do that unless we become Krishna conscious. Therefore, Krishna will give us knowledge in the ninth chapter, Bhagavad Gita, how to become conscious of Krishna. And so he says, Ashvadadana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa aprapyamam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. Those who are not faithful, they cannot obtain me, and therefore they have to come back to repeated birth and death in this world. So people may not like it that we keep on saying Krishna. Matter of fact, they say we're brainwashed. But we don't agree, because we know that our brains still aren't washed yet. We're just trying to wash our brains. And we know they're not brainwashed because they don't have a brain to wash. Prabhupada said their brains are made out of cow dung. So if you have dung, it doesn't matter how much you wash it, it's still the same substance. Or the other thing, Prabhupada said, your hearts are like coal. the more you wash coal, the dirtier everything becomes. But we're trying to wash our brains. So, and what is that? Ashvadadana purusha dharma syasti parantapa. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot obtain me. And therefore they come back to repeated birth and death in the world. So actually we're just trying to stop this idea that there's something I want or there's something I lost and I should be unhappy. We should try to become Krishna conscious. So in any happiness and distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat, we'll always be happy in Krishna consciousness. And then Krishna says, Maya titam idam sarvam jagara vyaktamurtina mastani sarabhutani nachaham teshuvashtita. That I'm everywhere. You can't get away from me. You may be trying to get away from me, but I'm conscious everywhere, and all this is my energy. I'm pervading everything. Every time you try to steal something from me, Maya captures you, because you're a thief. But, nichamantani karmani nivanandi dananjaya. Nityamastani bhutani paishame yoga maishvaram bhuta brinna ta bhuta stoma matma bhuta pavanaha. Yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am everywhere and myself is the very source of creation, still I'm aloof. I'm not part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation. So Krishna may pervade everything by his energy, and he may be conscious of everything that's going on, but he's still apart from the whole cosmic creation. Therefore, yata kasha sito nityam vayu sarvatriko mahan tata sarvani bhutani mastani yupadarya. As the mighty wind blows everywhere, but always remains in ethereal space, so all created beings rest in me. So everything is resting in the sky, the wind's blowing, but the sky is still aloof from everything. So similarly, Krishna pervades everything, is his energy, all the living entities are as part of his energy, but Krishna is apart from everything. He's simply conscious of everything. Sarva bhutani kundya praktim yani mamikam kapashaya pranastani kapado vishrijam yaham. O son of Kundi, at the end of millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another creation, by my potency, I create them again. Prakritim swama vashtabhya vishrijami punak punak bhuta gramam imam kritstam avasham prakritam visat. That the whole cosmic order is under me. By my will, it is automatically created, manifests again and again under my will, is annihilated at the end. So everything's going on by Krishna's will. The cosmic creation is coming and the cosmic creation is going by his will. But Nityamantani Karmani Devanandi Dharanjaya Udasi Nadvar Asi Namasaktam Teshu Karmasu. That all this work can not bind me, I'm ever detached, seated as though neutral. Krishna is like the judge. He's simply rewarding the living entities according to their desires and their previous activities. Maya Dakshena Prakriti Sayute Sacharacharam Hetunanena Kuntiya Jagatvi Parivartite. The material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and unmoving beings, and by its rule, and under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. Avajananti mamuda manushintanam ashityam param bhava majananto mamabhuta beheshwaram. The fools, they deride at my descending in this human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. In other words, Krishna is manifesting the material nature of the living entities just like a fly on a web is getting stuck. But the spider is not stuck on the web. Only the fly gets stuck. So we're like the flies, and Krishna's like the spider. We're getting stuck on his web. But when he comes, he's not at all stuck. He enjoys being on his web. It's home for him. But Krishna says, those who are fools, that's what the definition of fool is, a mudha, they don't understand this. Though we may be a learned scientist, a philosopher, a religionist, but if we don't understand how Krishna comes in his transcendental form and performs his pastimes in the transcendental energy, and we think he's like one of us, then we're considered to be mudha. Now we may not like being called mudha, or people may think we're being impolite by calling them mudha. They think we're just being sectarian because they don't believe in Krishna, they don't believe in this philosophy, they don't believe in karma, they don't believe in reincarnation, they don't believe in anything we're saying. Therefore, they're mudhas. According to our understanding, we don't prove to me that I'm a mudha. Well, your body's changing, but you're not changing. You think you are changing. So therefore you're a mudha. You don't see how the whole cosmic creation is going on by intelligence and how time is changing everything, but time is not changing. So you don't see anything right before you, what's happening. Therefore, you must be a mudha. Well, I'm a great scientist. So what can you do? Can you stop old age, disease, and death? Can you stop me taking rebirth again? If you can't, what is the value of your science? The real problem is you can't deal with. You deal with the little problems and give each other credit for it. Give these Nobel Prizes to each other. Make you feel good. And the person has a Nobel Prize, he goes to get the Nobel Prize and he dies from a heart attack. So what good is it? And he got his Nobel Prize for studying the heart. But they can't solve the real problems. They don't know who they are. They don't know how the material nature works. Therefore, they're considered mudhas, especially since they see God's coming. He's lifting Govardhan Hill with his left pinky for 7 days. And like Hansi, he's saying, so what? So he lifted one pebble called Govardhan Hill. Although, say, it's all mythology. These saintly persons were just making something up. Our history books are all true. But your books are all fairy tales. Our scientific book that says in the beginning there was nothing and nothing manifests itself from some gas, from the nothingness manifests some gas that formed into a rock and exploded and here we are now. That's supposed to be science. And we'll build a huge museum to commemorate the day that nothing became something. And everyone should go there and worship our deity, some rock. So this is called science. And when we say a person with supreme intelligence created everything intelligently, oh, this is all a fairy tale. It's all mythology. It's just by accident the sun's moving in its orbit exactly on time. We don't know how it's doing it. It's just lucky. We can't duplicate that accident, but we know it's an accident because if it wasn't an accident, then someone would have created it, and someone who had created it would have been unfair. He shouldn't be so powerful. It's unfair. So even if he was so powerful, he should join our democracy and see if people will vote for him. If not, he should step down from the position of God and take a more humble position. No, God is not subject to our vote. We may not believe him, but his prophet said we won't bow down before him. But then at the time of death, everyone bows down. So his time, Kalasmi Bharatarshiva, is going to force everyone to surrender, one way or another. And then Krishna says, Mogaisha Mogha Karamano, Mogha Jnana Vicheta Saha, Rakshasi Masrim Chaiva, Prakriti Mohanim Shritaha. That those who are thus bewildered, attracted by demoniac and atheistic views, in that deluded condition, their hopes of liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. So they won't get anything auspicious in this life or in the next. Ahatmano Sumam Partha, Daivim Prakriti Mashritya, those who are great souls, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So those who are under the spiritual energy, they're being protected from these deluded ideas. Just like it says in our purport here, that Krishna protects his devotee. Now, physically speaking, there's no protection for this devotee because the body is always changing. There's no time it's going to stop changing. Krishna can't come and say, oh, your body doesn't have to change anymore. You're not going to have to leave it. No, it's inevitable. Everyone has to leave their body. But real protection is not just the body, it's the soul. If the soul is protected, then it's complete protection, because at the time of leaving this body, which we're always leaving the body, or the body is leaving us, then the soul goes back to the spiritual world to live happily eternally. So real protection is to be under the divine energy of Krishna. And how to do it? How do we know who's a Mahatma, a great soul? Sadatam kirtiyantamam yatantas chadridavrataha namasyantashamam bhakta nityukta upasate. They chant Krishna's glory. So everyone here who's chanting Hare Krishna, who's awake, they're a great soul. And they're under the protection of the divine energy. Especially if they chant with great determination and they're be humble. They understand they're crying out to Krishna like a child calling for its mother. Then Krishna will give spiritual protection and one's life will become spiritually successful. It's not complicated. Just like sometimes some groups say, you know, how can you prove that you're actually, you know, a devotee? That you couldn't, what is the proof that you could actually, for instance, tell anyone else that you're about Krishna consciousness? How can you take the position of being instructing anyone? How do we know that you're not just a demon? Because Krishna says, we have a test. If someone's chanting Hare Krishna, if they're serving Krishna with determination, if they acknowledge Krishna as the Supreme, then they're great souls. And if you don't think they're a great soul, then because you're a Dharatma. Because you don't agree with Krishna, that's all. If you don't agree with Krishna, then we don't agree with you. Not very complicated. If you're envious of Krishna, and if you're envious of Krishna's devotee, then you must be envious of Krishna too. And therefore you're not a great soul. But those who are not envious, who are chanting Krishna's glories with determination and humbly recognizing how great Krishna is, they're great souls. Everyone else is a Dharatma, a Mudha. So that's our test. Now people may not agree with us, but that's all right. They don't agree with Krishna. But we agree with Krishna. That's all. They don't have to agree with us. We're asking them to agree with Krishna, not with us. We're trying to agree with Krishna. And they say, well, prove it to me. Show me Krishna in 5 seconds. Well, great. If I ask you, show me atomic physics in 5 seconds, are you going to be able to do it? No, you have to take to the science. You have to study the science. If you want to find out about Krishna, you have to study the science. If you don't want to find out about Krishna, that's your choice. All we can do is try to encourage you by pointing out that you're eternal. So why don't you act like your age? Why don't you act your age? Act eternally. Why are you acting like you're a body? Like you're 5 years old or 50 years old. Why don't you act like you're eternal? Act your age. That's all we're telling people. They have that in Slovenia, telling people to act your age. Yes? No? Act your age. Say you're 15 years old and you're acting like you're 5 years old. So people say, act your age. Act like a grown-up instead of a child. Everyone here acts their age. It's like when an old man acts like he's a child or something. Makes a fool out of himself. All right, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Hare Krishna. Maharshi mentioned that envy is manifested via rajas and tamas.
Yes.
And what about sattva guna? There is no envy?
There's rajas and tamas in sattva guna.
There
only
is.
In shuddha sattva there is no rajas and tamas. Pure goodness.
So how, if the hankering and the lamentation is the rajas and tamas, what is then the symptom in the sattva guna?
Hanger and lamenting.
Also?
Yeah. Just less, that's all. Even Rala Brahma, who executed perfectly Vanashram system for 100 births, he has some tendency to hanker and lament sometimes.
So that is tamas and rajas all the time.
Slightly, depending on what kind of Brahma it is, but generally it says in before he became enlightened, Brahma, by Haridasa Thakura, he's a sadhaka, which means he's not perfect in his devotional service.
And then I heard a statement about the envy, that this is the quality which is not present in the spiritual world. This is one version, and another version that there is also envy, which is the cause to come here. Can you comment on this? This is the only quality you cannot.
Well, either one is right.
I heard that the envy is the only quality you cannot Krishnaize.
Yeah, because by definition, you're envious of, you want to be Krishna. You want Krishna to disappear and you want to take his place. So how can you Krishnaize that? But as far as the other things, it doesn't make any sense. It's not. You can't have no envy in the spiritual world, and then you have envy in the spiritual world, and then we're here. Either there's envy in the spiritual world or there's not. It can't be both.
But probably there's some usually they said the spiritual material world is a reflection of spiritual world. All quality coexists.
That happens, and we get into the whole subject, how we ever came here. In any case, if we were curious, what it would be like to be Krishna for a while, that curiosity brings us here, and then we become envious. In other words, the original desire may have been curiosity, what it would be like to be Krishna. And then in order to find out, we come here, and then we become envious, because we find out we can't become Krishna. We want to become Krishna, we find out we can't. We become envious. We come here, not everyone acts as if we're God. In fact, most people don't. So we become envious of them. You're interfering with my desire to become God.
Here in the comment, it is, by culturing the mode of goodness, one can understand the position of the Transcendental Lord. So that means that, because you mentioned that also envy is also there in the Satvaguna, so it...
Well, you know, there's less enviousness. Okay. I mean, there's different degrees. So in Satvaguna, things are revealed. In ignorance, nothing is revealed. In passion, a little bit. But in goodness, actually, one can start understanding things properly. Therefore, it says, "Dumena vriyate vanir, yatarada sharana malena cha, tavrana vata karavasta ta tenam avrita." Just like fire is covered by smoke, or the mirror is covered by dust, or the embryo is covered by the womb, so different degrees of lust the living entity is covered by. So less lust, more enlightenment. When the clouds go away, then the sun becomes shiny. You can see the shiny sun.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. I heard once one lecture, when someone explained that you can also see envious, like when you see someone you're envious for, and you can, by that, you can recognize what you want to develop. I'm envious for that guy, for that devotee, and then you can introspect and see, okay, maybe this could be my goal, characteristics I would like to develop.
Yes, that's possible. Turn things in, for Krishna, of course.
Yes, of course.
Not just develop so I can become powerful too. Because otherwise that's also demonia. Svavit Brahostra Karara Samstuta Purusha Parashu Niyat Karma Patiopeda Jatunam Gadagaja. That men who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, they glorify the bigger hog, dog, camel, and ass. So people are glorifying and trying to imitate and follow in the footsteps of the bigger animal, because they're a small animal. But that won't help very much. We should try to glorify and follow in the footsteps of devotees, not just ordinary people. Anything else? Yes.
Maybe not too many messages here, only Sumedhatri. So I can ask, why Prabhupada mentioned several times that women, especially non-devotees, are like in the category of Shudras, less intelligent than men? How he explained
that? Well, there's age, everyone is a Shudra. You don't get too much credit. The women may be on the level of Shudras, but the men aren't above that either. Hello, Sudra, Sambhava. Everyone is born as a Shudra. But women will become elevated by a certain process, and men will become elevated by a certain process. Women will become elevated if they follow their Dharma, and men will become elevated if they follow their Dharma. So they have different Dharmas, Swadharmas, that's all. Of course, the ultimate Swadharma is just Krishna consciousness. But in terms of ordinary activities, then women have their duties and men have their duties and they'll become elevated if they follow it.
But like the beginners, when the new devotees, the beginner, when they come, like Mataji, women, they tend to ask, like, you know, they are upset by reading such a statement and what to explain them.
Because they're less intelligent. Remember, this prophet said, if you think you're your body, if you think you're a woman, then you're less intelligent. And hopefully in the course of time, when they find out they're not a woman, then they won't get upset anymore, because they're not a woman. They're a spiritual being. Otherwise, you read the Bhagavatam, probably criticizes the blacks, he criticizes the whites, he criticizes the young, he criticizes the old, criticizes the people in the earth planet, in interlope. Everyone gets criticized because they're in the Bali concept of life. Otherwise, if they're not in the Bali concept of life, then they're glorified, like Queen Kunti or Gandhari. Others, they're glorified because they're transcendental to this Bali concept. And anyone who's in the Bali concept of life, they're considered a fool and rascal. Doesn't matter, man or woman, black or white, rich or poor. Makes no difference. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.